Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe's economy can only recover with the assistance of financiers like the IMF and the World Bank.
We believe the time has come for Zimbabwe to turn the page and regain access to the financial support of the international community.
Human Rights Watch appeals to the United Nations to assist the more than 20,000 people affected by the flooding of the Tokwe Mukosi Basin in 2014.
We had very productive meetings with the representatives on the Africa section from the UN OCHA, the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, as well as UN Habitat.
And the Media Institute of Southern Africa condemns the government for entrenching its grip on the media by issuing radio licenses only to companies with alleged links to ZANU-PF.
If authorities were genuinely driven by the desire to democratize the broadcasting sector, they would have ensured that there was equitable sharing of this finite resource.
An International Monetary Fund mission that is reviewing the success of the Staff Monitored Program, an informal agreement between the country's authorities and the fund to monitor the implementation of the country's economic program, today said it agrees with the Zimbabwean government that Harare cannot resolve its financial problems without support from the international financiers like the IMF and the World Bank. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
Speaking during interactions with lawmakers from Parliament's Finance Committee, IMF Assistant Director and Head of Mission Domenico Faniza said it is time for Zimbabwe to restore relations with international financial institutions so it can creep out of economic crisis. He said all is not well with the Zimbabwean economy, which is currently working through the Staff Monitored Program, an informal agreement between Harare and the fund to monitor the implementation of the country's economic program. This, however, does not entail financial assistance or endorsement by the IMF Executive Board. The SPM focuses on putting the country's public finances on a sustainable course while protecting investment and prioritizing social spending, strengthening public finances on a sustainable course, among other things. Faniza said, with the backing of the international financiers, Zimbabwe's economy can get back on the rails to recovery.
We believe the time has come for Zimbabwe to turn the page and regain access to the financial support of the international community. More than 15 years have gone by since Zimbabwe has been cut off from the support, and I think it is important to turn the page and start to look forward.
He said it is necessary for Zimbabwe to implement radical reforms as agreed under the Staff Monitored Program, adding this would lead to restoration of relations with the international community.
Once that is done, we can think about a financial re-engagement of the IMF in the country, and also Zimbabwe can think of requesting rescheduling of the outstanding bilateral debt with donors through the Paris Club.
Faniza said it was a difficult path, but Zimbabwe had agreed to undertake the reforms as this is key to the re-engagement process with the global community. He said he is pleased with their preliminary findings, which he said indicate that the government is maintaining the right policy direction and meeting some of the benchmarks agreed on in the Staff Monitored Program.
Also, there have been important reforms undertaken in the financial sector. In particular, there have been significant progress. And the benchmarks that were set have been met. Of course, this is the backward part of our assessment. Now we are in the process to discuss the future policies.
The program focuses on such areas as public sector financial management, indigenization law, and banking sector reform. Some economic experts say, though the IMF mission has noted some positives in the implementation of the program, the government still faces challenges in maintaining fiscal discipline, reducing its workforce, and lack of clarity on indigenization. Asked why the IMF was not advancing financial assistance to help save the troubled Zimbabwean economy, as is happening with Greece, Faniza said that could only happen if Zimbabwe paid its debts or agreed on rescheduling its nearly $10 billion debt with international financial institutions. Zimbabwe says it is working with financial institutions to resolve its debt crisis. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The international human rights group, Human Rights Watch, has appealed to the United Nations to assist the more than 20,000 people affected by the flooding of the Tokwemkosi Basin in 2014. The rights group is accusing the government of neglecting the flood victims. The families were first relocated at Chingwizi Farm and have since been transferred to Nwanetse Range, which even the government has admitted is not habitable. The area is infested with killer spiders, snakes, and is unsafe and scarce water supplies. Newly appointed Mashingo resident Minister Shuai Maofa told Studio 7 that the government is planning to relocate the families to another farm. The residents told Studio 7 that they feel abandoned and have run out of food. Government has also been struggling to compensate the flood victims for their losses. The plight of the flood victims has also captured the attention of the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights, or RFK Center, which hosted Human Rights Watch researcher Dewama Vinga yesterday after his meeting with the UN officials in New York. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with Dewama Vinga and RFK Center Africa specialist Jeff Smith. Blessing first asked Mavinga about his mission to the United Nations headquarters.
In New York, as Human Rights Watch, we had very productive meetings with representatives on the Africa section from the UN OCHA, the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, as well as UN Habitat, and other officials within the UNDP are in New York, so they received well our recommendations, and the discussions, I must say, were very fruitful. But what it means also is that we are continuing with the engagement with UN officials in Zimbabwe to try and emphasize what needs to be done urgently.
Jeff, what role can the United Nations play here? Remember, last time there was the Tibaijuka report. After more than 700,000 people were displaced, the UN sent a rapporteur, there were recommendations, but there was no follow-through.
Sure, exactly. As you mentioned, there was no follow-through. And again, you know, I think the current predicament that many of these people find themselves in Zimbabwe, and it's not just confined to the flood victims, of course, that's a huge and serious and ongoing problem, but it's indicative of the bigger problems in Zimbabwe. Mugabe, as the current head of the African Union, for instance, in his first speech said his focus for this year will be uplifting people from poverty and from want, and clearly that is not happening in his own country. So I think a lot of work needs to be done within the ZANU-PF government to help those people in need. Right now you have one-third of Zimbabwe's rural population that needs food assistance from the United Nations, for instance. This is a country that is more than capable of feeding itself, not only feeding itself, but feeding the region. As many people remember, it was an exporter, a net exporter of goods and of food.
Now, turning back to you, Mr. Mavinga, can the international community be trusted to deal with this problem? I mean, for instance, you have what I can call a policy contradiction when it comes to dealing with Zimbabwe. You have the EU easing sanctions, obviously, and dealing directly with the Zimbabwe government, and you have the U.S. government, for example, still maintaining those targeted sanctions.
Well, I think what needs to be clear to the international community is that whatever form of re-engagement that takes place need not sacrifice human rights protection.
Mr. Smith, your take on these seemingly policy contradictions?
Yeah, there's certainly been some distance between the European Union, for instance, and Washington in terms of their policy towards Zimbabwe and the ZANU-PF government. But I think, you know, we have to remind ourselves why these targeted financial restrictions are put in place in the first instance, and it's because of fundamental lack of democracy, respect for human rights, and the rule of law. And we really have to be honest with ourselves, and the Zimbabwean government has to be honest with themselves too and answer the question, has Zimbabwe restored respect for democracy, respect for human rights, and the rule of law? And the simple answer is no. You know, there's still widespread repression against civil society, against the opposition. We see what's happening with the flood victims. As I said, it's indicative of a larger rule of law problem that Dewa also touched on. Secondly, you know, there's this argument that re-engagement from the West or from the EU can help lead to reform. I am not convinced that that can happen. As I said, those basic benchmarks have not been met over the past, over the past decade.
That was Human Rights Watch researcher Dewa Mavinga. You also heard the views of Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights Africa specialist Jeff Smith. The two spoke with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu in Washington.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA Zimbabwe, has condemned the government for entrenching its grip on the media by issuing radio licenses only to companies with alleged links to ZANU-PF. The Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe announced yesterday it had licensed 8 new regional commercial radio stations. 2 of the beneficiaries, AB Communications and Zim Papers, both with close ties to ZANU-PF, are already running radio stations in Harare after securing licenses a few years ago. AB Communications, founded by Minister Superman Diwanzira, will establish Fire FM in Gweru and Gogo Goi FM in Maswingo, while Zim Papers will start Diamond FM in Mutare.
The other beneficiaries are Ray of Home, which will establish YAFM in Rishawane, and Kingston's, which will operate Nyami Nyami FM in Kariba and KE100.4 FM in Harare. Fair Talk Communications, owned by playwright Kwandim Shanga, will run Sky's Metro FM in Bulawayo and Breeze FM in Victoria Falls. But according to MISA, truly independent players were denied licenses. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached legendary broadcaster Ezra Chisaswanda, whose Sky's FM was denied a license.
It's not surprising that we didn't succeed. Or we have already heard that there were already plans to give certain people radio licenses to broadcast. We thought that maybe as the Zimbabwean citizens, as Zimbabwean themselves, will love and follow the country's rules and regulations, we will just apply for radio license to do what we do best, to broadcast. But there were some talks, and we heard that it's foregone conclusion. But we didn't believe it. We just went on to apply, losing 15,000 and putting an application. And the results are not surprising anyway. But anyway, we will try to soldier on. And hopefully one day, common sense might prevail, and then we are given a radio license to broadcast like all citizens would really deserve to have their own radio station.
Given the latest licensing, the government might argue that the issue of liberalizing the airwaves is no longer an issue. Would you agree?
Not at all. Definitely, we are far, far behind. We are really going backwards. If I may ask you or ask anyone in Zimbabwe, why will people struggle to have radio licenses to broadcast? Radio is the medium for people to share information, entertain, and educate themselves. But in Zimbabwe, it looks like it's a very, very serious thing. I don't even know why they decide to give one radio station, one license to Bulawayo. Bulawayo is bigger than Bulawayo. Zimbabwe has got only so-called two independent commercial radio stations. We talk of civilization, we talk of being a modern country, but we are going backwards. We look at the neighbor, South Africa, and look at how many radio stations are there, how many community radio stations are there, how many commercial radio stations are there. Radio helps, it creates employment, it also helps to educate the people. We are moving with time, but Zimbabwe is going backwards.
legendary broadcaster Ezra Chisaswanda on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from the United Kingdom.
Mr. Zimbabwe Director Nhlanhla Ngwenya says his organization will continue engaging the government on the need for a true and complete liberalization of the airwaves.
Almost all those that have been granted these regional licenses are closely linked to the state and the ruling party. Zim Peppers was granted a license. Kingston also got licenses. And these two entities are under state control. In addition to that, you also have AB Communications also getting licenses for Gweru and Masingo. And we know that AB Communications, the majority shareholder of that entity, belongs to the Minister Supermandu Wandira's family trust. So in essence, this is why there are these grumblings. And there are also allegations that the other two entities, the proprietors, are also linked to the ruling party. So this is why there are these grumblings. And I think it is only fair to say that if authorities were genuinely driven by the desire to democratize the broadcasting sector, they would have ensured that there was equitable sharing of this finite resource.
Are you therefore going to engage the government on this matter?
As usual, as an organization that is largely involved in advocacy, an organization that seeks to influence policy reforms around these matters, engagement cannot be a substitute.
Nhlanhla Ngwenya is director of MISA Zimbabwe. He was speaking with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo of Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com or text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the Diaspora Forum with Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Election results in the tiny African enclave of Lesotho show no outright winner in Saturday's snap elections, making a coalition government likely.
U.S. federal agents raided more than a dozen locations yesterday in California in a crackdown on so-called maternity tourism schemes, catering mainly to pregnant women from China who want their babies to be born U.S. citizens.
And authorities in Mozambique say a prominent academic and constitutional law scholar who has openly supported greater autonomy for parts of Mozambique has been shot to death. The official opening of this year's tobacco auction season at the Boka Tobacco Auction Floors was today disrupted by protesting farmers who were unhappy with the low prices they were being offered. And riot police were called in to restrain the protesting farmers who were singing and denouncing the authorities for the low tobacco prices. The first bale of tobacco that went under the hammer fetched $3.50 per kilogram, but the farmers lost their heads when prices went to as low as 20 cents per kilogram. Trade and Commerce Minister Mike Bima was the guest of honor. Last year, the first sales saw one bale fetching as high as $4.85 a kilogram, but the prices later fell, prompting some farmers to hold on to their crop for some time. Studio 7 failed to reach Tobacco Industry and Marketing Board Chief Executive Officer Andrew Matibiri, whose mobile phone was not answered. We spoke earlier with Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union President Wanda Chabikwa, who was at the Boka auction floors when the protest broke out.
We had the first bill, said it $3.50, and prices seemed to be going down until there was an outcry from the people there who want to pick their farmers, and they showed their anger that the price was getting too low. And they thought it was very unrealistic, and they actually demanded that the auction be stopped. However, we have Tobacco Industry and Marketing Board. And this board employs professionals, experts in tobacco. We are still to get information from them as to why we have had some bills going as low as 50 cents per kg. If it's true, I heard some farmers were saying a bill or two or some bills went at 20 cents per kg. We are still to know the reason. Is it because it's very poor quality? Whatever it is.
After demonstrations by farmers, did the auction resume?
Well, when I left, the farmers were still demonstrating, but I want to think they can't demonstrate forever. I think the auctioning will not stop. I'm not really sure whether they resumed or maybe because there was this demonstration maybe at that particular floor, they might have canceled for the day.
That was Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union President Wanda Chabikwa on the line with us from Harare.
In our segment of focusing on the diaspora community, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye speaks with Natalie Jabangwe Morris, who left the United Kingdom last year to join Econet as head of EcoCash. Mrs. Jabangwe Morris was one of the executives who attended a recent Africa Business Conference at the Harvard University Business School that sought to bring the African business community, students, and others together to focus and discuss and share ideas on what roles Africans in the diaspora can play in reviving their home economies. Mrs. Jabangwe Morris tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye why she decided to return to Zimbabwe and what impact she thinks she has made so far in the business sector.
I currently work for Econet Wireless Zimbabwe after having moved back to Zimbabwe a year ago. Having spent 14 years in the diaspora, left Zimbabwe at 18 to study for a degree in computer science, computer engineering by nature. Undertook part of my degree at Spelman College in Atlanta, then moved back to the UK, where I worked for a software house that developed software solutions for investment banks across Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Did that for 3 years as a software engineer and moved to retail banking solutions, where I worked with NCR Corporation before moving into Imperial College London, where I did my executive MBA. And it was during this time that I took on the role of a senior technology global consultant for NCR Corporation to map out their roadmap into how they could move from traditional retail solutions into mobile technology-based retail solutions. And this strategy was across 52 countries, and now I've moved into mobile financial solutions. So my career sort of spun through the traditional financial technology solutions into the now more disruptive mobile financial services solutions. So I find that I've been lucky to go through the innovation curve, and it's exciting times.
And what prompted you as a young woman? You've trained abroad, you've been working with all these Fortune 500 companies, to move back to Zimbabwe and join a local company that's based in your home country. What prompted you to do that?
I think it goes way back to my college days, where when I was studying at Spelman, the tagline in our day really was that to whom much is given, much is required. And that's always carried as part of a key personal value for me, that Zimbabwe as a country has given me so much. We stand out in the African region as the second most literate country, sitting at 97% of literacy rate. The majority of Zimbabweans that you find out there are well-educated and they're running Fortune 500 companies, when we have a country that is not doing so well. And when you look at that balance, there has to be something wrong with it. What are we giving back to Zimbabwe? And I felt that I had done everything I could do for myself, for other countries abroad, but I sat there as one of the people that always complained about Zimbabwe's governance, about its future, about what was happening really in Zimbabwe. But I had been given much by a country that I'm not giving back to. And I think instead of sitting back, I needed to give back to Zimbabwe because I've been given so much. And that really is my quest around why I've returned back on the continent and Zimbabwe specifically.
And who is Natalie? How would you inspire a woman listening out there? You have a loaded resume, but someone listening out there is saying, okay, I can't do what she did. She went to Spelman and then went to the UK, but you're going back to Zimbabwe. But how do you inspire somebody listening out there who's lost hope? What word of advice do you have for them?
Natalie's the only girl are in a family of four boys. Absolutely ordinary is how I describe myself. Went to a regular school in Zimbabwe, went to Chinoy High before going to the UK where I was born, although my parents are Zimbabwean, but that has got nothing to do with it. What it has to do with it is that you can be whoever you want to be, regardless of where you come from. And so I have an ordinary Zimbabwean upbringing, was fortunate to study abroad, but I think what's important about it is that we take not for granted the opportunities and the exposure that we get. And so I think for anybody who's out there who's got ordinary circumstances like I do, I think I repeat to people all the time that it's the passion, it is your hard work, and it is your determination, that nobody at all can take that away from you. And I often remind people that before I was an engineer, I was actually a lover of literature. Mm-hmm. So for my A-levels, I specialized in arts. Mm-hmm. So that was your ordinary history, geography, and English literature. And you would have thought maybe I would have gone into the arts.
Natalie Jabangwe Morris is the head of EcoCash. She was speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye on the sidelines of the Harvard Business School Africa Business Conference in Boston.
And in our sports segment, Zimbabwe's Wayne Black is excited to return to Davis Cup tennis after a 10-year absence. Reporter Michael Cariati gives us the story.
Blake will make a return to Davis Cup tennis at the age of 40 when he lines up for Zimbabwe in their three-day Euro-Africa Zone Group 2 tie against Bosnia-Herzegovina starting Friday. Davis Cup team non-playing captain Martin Zuwa has revealed Blake will play in the doubles alongside Mark Finn. Zuwa says Blake's availability and the early arrival of Finn will help the team develop their doubles partnership.
For them being here also gives me a chance to look at our doubles pair.
Blake is buoyed on by the fact that some players have continued playing Davis Cup tennis to the ripe age of 50, with San Marino's Vittorio Pelandra playing against Egypt in 2007 at the age of 66. Blake himself says he's going to take one game at a time, adding that all he wants is to win his matches.
Take one match at a time. You know, it's one Davis Cup match at a time. I wanted to win so badly.
Bosnia-Herzegovina are ranked 48th in the world, while Zimbabwe are in 74th position. The visitors' top singles players are also ranked far much higher than Zimbabwe's players. Dama Dzumbu is ranked 89th in the world, while their second seed, Mirza Basic, is in 199 position. Zimbabwe's top player, Takanyi Garanganga, who is based in Atlanta in the USA, is way down the rankings on 324th position, with his career-high ranking having been 288. However, Zuwa is not reading into that, boasting that the Zimbabweans are banking on history.
On paper, they're a better side, but I think Zimbabwe, from before, they've been causing upsets during Wayne's time or during our time, beat Australia in Australia. So going into this tie, I mean, it's a 50-50 chance.
The Zimbabweans are hoping to go all the way in their group and gain promotion into the Euro-Africa Zone Group 1 next year. While in the past, Zimbabwe played all their home matches at the Harare City Sports Center, the tie against Bosnia-Herzegovina will be at Harare Sports Club. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 live talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the issuing of new radio licenses.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe's economy can only recover with the assistance of financiers like the IMF and the World Bank.
Human Rights Watch appeals to the United Nations to assist the more than 20,000 people affected by the flooding of the Tokwe Mukosi Basin in 2014.
And the Media Institute of Southern Africa condemns the government for entrenching its grip on the media by issuing radio licenses only to companies with alleged links to ZANU-PF.
That's our broadcast this evening. Good night, Zimbabwe.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Debele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.